OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties, one county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that bold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties, one county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that bold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now you're welcome back. Very happy to say that Dr. Una May from Sport Ireland is with us. Evening, Una. Thanks for your time.
You're very welcome. Yep. Good to be here.
People are familiar with the James Cronin case at this stage. Where it had been for the last number of days and weeks was waiting really on a decision from Sport Ireland and or WADA on whether or not to appeal the 1 month suspension handed down to James Cronin. You've made your decision. The decision is not to appeal. Give us the thought process behind that.
Yeah, no, you're correct there. We have decided not to appeal. And while we were publicly aware that we weren't enthusiastic about the 1 month suspension, we felt it was quite lenient. I suppose on further analysis, on full analysis, with the full backing of a legal team comprising a barrister who's a former CAS counsel and regularly appears before CAS, we took the legal advice, and their suggestion was that we would be unlikely to get a significant increase in a sanction. So sanctions under the World Anti-Doping Code are standardised in accordance with the substance that was found and the circumstances of the case. And whereas in an ordinary situation with a normal doping substance, 4 years is the starting point. In some cases, that can be reduced to 2 very rapidly. And then in the case of certain substances, it can be reduced significantly right down, in fact, right down to zero sanction. So it's based on the athlete's degree of fault, their level of intention, that sort of thing. So in this particular instance, it became very clear that this was going to be no matter what the process involved, this was likely to fall within the lowest category of sanction. So our review and analysis of the situation was that we could enter a very lengthy process, and bearing in mind that CAS is not currently hearing cases, we could be entering a process that could take 6 months to a year for the sake of increasing a sanction by a month or two. And we were also aware that WADA had been consulted in the development and the establishment of this sanction. So all in all, it didn't seem appropriate from our point of view to pursue this for the sake of a month or two, even though we would have been more comfortable with a longer suspension.
How costly would it have been? Does that come into it? I know we touched on this in our conversation before. How much would it have cost to pursue this over the course of 6 months or a year all the way through to CAS?
Well, I mean, I did indicate before, cost generally is not how we determine whether a case is going to be pursued or not. And I suppose a clear indication of that is that I don't know how much it costs, but I can be fairly confident to say that it would be very costly. Mm-hmm. But it's not something, we didn't establish the cost and make a decision based on was it worth the cost. It's something you take into consideration if you're going to enter a lengthy process based on a very small potential. And, you know, even though at best case scenario, we might have got an increase in the sanction, there's a possibility that we might not have got any increase in the sanction. So it's important to take these things into consideration. It isn't the deciding factor, but we would take these things into consideration.
It's not possible in other pursuits, but in sports like rugby, soccer, GAA, should players increasingly just be banned for a number of matches and not periods of time? There does seem to be a huge element of luck associated with when you get caught for a transgression.
Yeah, I think it's not a bad suggestion. And you know, every few years we have a review of the World Anti-Doping Code, and we have just come through another process. There's a new code due, subject to the I suppose, how the world fares in recovering from the pandemic that we're in at the moment. But there's a new code due to commence next January in 2021. So it'll be a few years before there's another review. But when those reviews take place, everybody, all stakeholders, every governing body, international federation, national anti-doping organisations are given the opportunity to feed into the system and propose changes to it. And it's not something that's previously been suggested, but I think it's certainly worthy of consideration.
Are you disappointed, frustrated with the 1 month ban?
It's less than we'd like to see. I you know, it's a small bit frustrating. We weren't involved in the case, and we feel that if an athlete has any responsibility at all, then they should be held responsible. And I think 1 month is a very light sanction on the base of an athlete who hasn't taken and followed through, you know, to the full extent that you'd like to see athletes. And from our point of view, in this case, the athlete is lucky in that it wasn't a significantly, you know, it wasn't a substance, I suppose, that would lead to a long and lengthy suspension. But, you know, similar circumstances, an athlete could have fallen foul and had a much lengthier suspension. So from our point of view, the most positive thing coming out of this will be the possibility that, as James Crone himself has offered, is to take part in further educating people, because it's so crucial that people, and athletes in particular, and particularly high performance athletes, take responsibility for what goes into their own body and doesn't trust. And unfortunately, you know, you would like to think that you could trust the medical system to get it right, but you know, this has proven that errors can occur, and it's important that athletes and players check everything that they take and are very aware of what they take. Too many athletes rely and ask their doctor to fill in their doping control form for them without actually knowing themselves what they're taking. And we know that from experience working with athletes, that they rely on their medical team to know what they're taking, whereas they should know themselves what they're taking.
There are two aspects to this investigation. There is Anthony Davies' judgment, which has been made public, and he even came on the show and discussed his thought process on the 1 month ban. People can agree or disagree with it. To what extent a 3 month ban as a deterrent is different to a 1 month ban for a starting point, I'm not so sure. I would presume for the athlete in question, in any case, it's having your name dragged through the mud, the publicity, the asterisks alongside your name. Like, I don't know to what extent 3 months versus 1 month is that much of a difference in deterrent?
Well, I mean, I would agree with you. And I think that's one that would be the sort of thinking, you know, behind, you know, our justification for whether to appeal this or not. And as I said, to enter into a lengthy and complicated process for the sake of that. And I think you're absolutely right. And that's why it's so important, as I said earlier, for athletes to be so aware, because even if an athlete got no sanction at all, if it's found that they're guilty of ingesting something that they shouldn't have ingested, then there is a huge reputational risk to them. And regardless of what the substance and what the circumstances are and how small the suspension is, reputationally that individual will be damaged by the situation. And I think that's very clear.
The second part of the investigation is the one that we've less information on. It's what happened. EPCR's lawyers, Bird and Bird in the UK, investigated the case, and they obviously dealt with Munster's legal team. You said, I think it was to Gavin Comiskey last night, on that investigation, you're satisfied that it was thorough, that it was well conducted. Have you like how many, what are we talking about here in terms of a document? Because we haven't seen this. Like when we hear that it's thorough, what are we talking? I mean, give us a sense of the nature of this investigation, how detailed it was.
Well, I suppose the athlete provided, the player provided a significant amount of evidence. And without going into the details of the evidence, the athlete was able to provide a lot of substantial, I suppose, documentation to verify their story. And also, I suppose, one of the issues that was raised is whether the athlete should have been cross-examined. And I suppose it's important that people, you know, I suppose I'm not saying that, that the EPCR came to the right decision with 1 month, but what they did do is they didn't just accept the first story that came back. They did go backwards and forwards quite a few times, seeking further clarifications and further verifications of the statement that was made by the player in the early stages of this when they were notified of the finding. So we have evidence of a lot of documentation backwards and forwards, and we have evidence relating to how the athlete came to be in possession of the substance as well.
Did Munster cooperate at all times?
I'm not. You know, we weren't involved in that side of it.
Based on the documentation, and you would have seen the questions back and forth.
And you know, look, I suppose that's not really for us to share or discuss who was involved in what level of discussion, and whether it was Munster or whether it was the player or whether it was the RFU or who was engaged in the process. I suppose our decision was based on, you know, the information that was provided in defending the athlete's position in this, and that's what we would have based our judgments on, and that's where our energy was focused, was in the documentation and the evidence that was provided in order to ensure that the athlete or the player was able to verify his position.
Okay, but you are our eyes and ears on this. You are our watchdog. We haven't seen what went on between Munster's legal team and the other legal team on behalf of the EPCR. So I'm asking these questions without much of an agenda. I have no inside information here. It would just strike me as a natural question to ask, i.e., did Munster cooperate and
I think it's fair to say that all parties involved in this were fully cooperative. I think everybody was fully cooperative and provided the assistance and support and evidence that was requested of them. So I have no issue with anybody's support in you know, processing the case.
Okay. In Anthony Davies's judgment, he listed out the various pieces of information and evidence, and there's no doubting that it's a thorough list of information provided by James Cronin and or Munster and the legal team. For instance, information surrounding the other client of the pharmacy, and I'm not looking for the person's name, but it was in Brendan Fanning's piece in the Sunday Independent where it turns out that part of Munster's defense was a planning permission document with this client's name on it, and it matched the records of the pharmacy, something very much in James Cronin's favor. And that wasn't in Anthony Davies's report. And it just begs the question, what are we seeing and what are we not seeing? Is there a point where this will all be published, where the evidence will be published in full, where this will be laid out before the public so that everybody can be satisfied and move on?
I think that the decision has been published, and I don't expect that any more of the evidence, in the same as any legal case you'd find in a court, the full documentation and evidence package wouldn't be made public. And in particular, where there's another individual who has absolutely nothing to do with the situation is involved, then it's highly unlikely that anything relating to that individual would be published. It shouldn't be. You know, they have nothing to do with the case and the situation involved. It does seem clear to us that there was an issue and a potential error made by a pharmacy, and we have no jurisdiction over the pharmacy and what happened in that situation. However, we have agreed under the Sport Ireland Act, we have the right to seek the minister's authorisation to put in place a memorandum of understanding with other state agencies. And we have received the minister's sign off last week, his approval to put in place a memorandum of understanding with the Pharmaceutical Society of Ireland, who have the full jurisdiction and the full powers of investigation and, you know, whatever it takes in way of enforcement in relation to the pharmacy. But that's an area that we can't deal with. And so evidence relating to what happened within the pharmacy and its other customers and what might have or might not have transpired is really a matter for the Pharmaceutical Society. And we will cooperate fully if they choose to carry out an investigation. And by having a memorandum of understanding, we'll be in a position to share information with them, which would be in a confidential manner in accordance with data protection regulations and would be consistent with those kind of laws, so that and without the necessity to publish that information to the public to make that decision, an authority which has responsibility and the process and the regulation in place in order and okay. The powers to carry out that investigation can do that.
So much as we can say, and I understand the other client doesn't need to get dragged into this whole thing, and I'm not looking for the client's name to be published. Are you satisfied? Your frustration with Anthony Davies and the 1 month is clear. Are Sport Ireland satisfied with the thoroughness of the investigation conducted by the EPCR? Because for people to understand, Anthony Davies decides on the 1 month. What happens is an investigation happens and an agreed set of facts are handed to Anthony Davies. So he's told, investigation is done. Here is what happened. We have agreed that. Are Sport Ireland happy based on all the documentation that the agreed set of facts thoroughly investigated, kosher, we're happy with them, and we can park that as a job well done?
We're certainly, we are very happy that the documentation that we received was enough to verify the case as it stood. We were comfortable with the level of documentation provided and the degree of follow-up, and as I said, there was quite a bit of backwards and forwards to you know, obtain the full documentation supporting this. And so we are confident that the information that was provided was satisfactory from our point of view to justify the circumstance of the case, which would determine that this would be a low-end sanction. And we're also aware that the EPCR had consulted with WADA in determining that it would be a low sanction and that WADA's guidance was followed in the case. So the EPCR would have recommended to Anthony Davies what they felt was the appropriate sanction. And this was the basis of the arbitration, was the EPCR recommendation and the player's acceptance of that.
The lack of face-to-face cross-examination, how common is that? Because it would strike a lot of us as a natural thing to happen, regardless of how thorough or otherwise the documentary evidence was.
It's certainly not uncommon, and I suppose I've made the point already that in sport, the process, the disciplinary process, is based on arbitration, and in a case of arbitration, if both sides agree to an outcome, and if the EPCR was happy to propose a 1 month and the player was happy to accept the 1 month, then you don't have the reason to have a hearing. So the EPCR made its decision based on, as I said, although it wasn't face-to-face cross-examination, there was considerable backwards and forwards between the player's legal team and the EPCR before they reached that decision. So they didn't just accept the first position the player stated. They followed up and asked for verification and for confirmation. So in the same way as in a hearing, if all that evidence hadn't been laid out beforehand in the hearing, then the player might have been asked, you know, how can you prove this or prove that? So in this case, you know, unless you're actually looking for the word of the athlete being the basis of your decision, if you've got sufficient evidence, you don't need any word of the athlete if you've got sufficient evidence in place. And the evidence provided in this case was pretty comprehensive.
Okay. You said as well that you're meeting Munster and you're going to discuss the implications from the case with them. What kind of points will you be making to them?
Well, we've asked the IRFU and Munster to meet with us just in order to discuss what we can do going forward with this. As we've just discussed just now, the reputational damage to the individual concerned here is very significant, and we'd like to see if there's gaps in the education that we need to address, or if there is something. I mean, James Cronin himself offered to, I suppose, to be part of an educational message, and I think that would be valuable. You know, we need to look at what's required here. Do we need to do more testing? Do we need to do more education? You know, it's to look at the implications of this and see what the actions we might take coming out of this would lead to.
And what do you suspect those actions are? Like, this would strike a lot of people as a fairly basic error. So there's definitely a gap in education.
Yeah, and you know, we've been carrying out a significantly increased amount of education. You know, we've trained very large numbers of tutors across all sports in order to make sure that our messages reached all the levels of sport. And the IRFU in particular have been really very committed to the education message. In fact, they've rolled out a really solid program called the Spirit of Rugby, which targets players right down to the younger levels who aren't even being tested. So it starts with an education around values in sport and ethical decision making, so that even before doping becomes an issue, they're trying to instill those kind of values in their players at a young age, so that then as they get older, the focus message becomes more on the doping side of things. And you know, there are messages around that you should or shouldn't take substances, and then there's messages in terms of how to ensure that you don't fall foul of an accident and an inadvertent doping case. So there's a lot of messages, and it's a complex area to try and ensure. And I think, you know, we will always, you know, see room for improvement in education. There's a new international standard for education that's going to be launched at the same time as the New World Anti-Doping Code in January 2021 in order to, I suppose, increase the focus and emphasis on education. And, you know, we were part of, actually, as it happens, our education officer manager was responsible partly for the development and the you know, creation of that international standard. So we're very involved with the education. We take it very seriously. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's an ongoing battle. I mean, it's remarkable that players, and you do hear it occasionally, people, oh, I didn't know that I might be tested, or I didn't know that steroids were banned. I mean, it's kind of inexcusable and it's hard to believe. Mm-hmm. But it's a never-ending challenge for us, is to make sure that those messages are constantly heard.
One last thought. This all happened a month ago now, if not slightly more, and there were various press releases from the IRFU, from Munster, from the EPCR, and in fairness, Anthony Davies came on and defended his judgment, gave his thinking, and ultimately he was of the opinion that the evidence is sufficient and the player's culpability here, given the mistake at the pharmacy, is extremely low. Davies aside, doing that interview, just nothing from anyone. IRFU, nothing. Munster Rugby, nothing. Player himself, nothing. Munster doctor, nothing. CEO of Munster, nothing. Kind of bunkering down, give out as little information as possible, likes of Brendan Fanning hammering away at it, trying to get extra bits of information, because as you well know, it's the second most tested sport in the country at the moment. There is a perception issue. Do you think that's best practice? When Sport Ireland are looking at all this happening, do you think to yourself, yeah, this is the way to do it? It's, you know, don't get into doing interviews or press conferences, say nothing, because it doesn't strike me as a good approach.
Well, I mean, I suppose you already there in the last few minutes gave a lot of detail of the case. So the information was that there was a lot of information provided in the decision, and that's how it normally works. The information is provided in the decision. The basis for at which the decision was reached is provided in there. And so, you know, the decision is made, the information is out in the public domain, the player has issued a statement. You know, going forward from that, I'm not sure of the added value of going on and seeking, you know, further details, when the detail of the decision and how the decision was reached is what's important. And I think that's the key, is that we are very strongly in favour of full transparency. But full transparency doesn't have to mean every single document is released, as long as it's the information that provides the justification for the decision is provided. And I think it was, and I think you've just quoted back a lot of it there. You know, the decision was reached based on the information that was provided, and that information was made public. And I'm not sure really how much value there would be added to the situation for people to come out and talk more about it. I mean, the information was all there.
Mm. One, transparency, and two, if we're so big on education and we're so keen to go around and educate all the players, what a platform if he wants to talk about it, no?
Yeah, but I think we'll manage the platform in a managed way rather than it being a reactionary thing. I think it's more important that you reach the right people rather than it being a public announcement around persecution of an individual who's been found guilty, served their time, and that's the situation within anti-doping. We believe that athletes who do, I suppose, have an anti-doping rule violation, that they have to serve a suspension if it's appropriate. And once that's suspension is served, they've served their time in same as you would in any sort of situation in life. Once you've served your time, then you should be able to move on. But if James Cronin is willing and prepared to contribute to the message in the future, I think we do it in a managed way and we target the right kind of target audience. It's not necessarily a public announcement around for spectators of the sport. It's for players that need to receive this kind of education, and we'll focus our message and we'll ensure that players in an appropriate environment are provided with very strong education on this. But, you know, the educational benefit of James Cronin's involvement is not necessarily something that we need to achieve through, I suppose, follow up at the time of a hearing. I think everybody with an interest in rugby is aware of his name and aware of the case and aware of the situation. And I mean, a lot of, as I said, a very significant amount of information is already available in terms of the context and the circumstances. So I'm not 100% sure that there's a whole lot of extra information that's being hidden from the public. You know, it's very clear that, you know, there was a statement, there was a decision made based on an error within a pharmacy. So there's a role potentially, if they choose to take it, for the Pharmaceutical Society to investigate the practices within the pharmacy. There's a player who has clearly not followed through 100% and fully on due diligence, and there's a lesson to be learned from that. And I'm not 100% sure really how much more value there is in digging any deeper in the information that's available, you know.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming on, explaining all that. Una May from Sport Ireland. Thanks, Una.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
OTB's Mount Rushmore, 32 counties, one county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that gold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7:30 AM on OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB's Mount Rushmore, 32 counties, one county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that gold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7:30 AM on OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network.